Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the BC Members Call on Thursday, August 3rd, 2017. On today's call, we have Adetola Sodesbason, Arinola Akinyemi, Barbara Warner, Chris Wilson, Christian Bope, Jay Sadowski, Jensen Alufier, Christina Olasson, Marilyn Cade, Philip Corwin, Paul Mitchell, Stephanie Deschanel, Steve Del Bianco, Susan Kawaguchi, and Tim Chen. On the phone bridge, we have Lawrence Olawale Roberts and Marcus Eke. We have apologies, and we also have Denise Michelle. We have apologies from Andy Abrams, Andrew Max, Cheryl Miller, and Marie Petullo. From staff, we have myself, Chantal Dirksen. I'd like to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for the transcript. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Steve.
This is Steve Del Bianco. As your Vice Chair for Policy Coordination, I'll be pinch hitting for Andrew Mack to chair today's meeting. Andrew could not join. The policy calendar was sent out yesterday. Chantal, would you please load the PDF for today's policy calendar? We'll get right to it. We only have one item that's new in terms of postings since our last call. It's the first item on the list on there, which is that over the weekend, the 31st of July, we filed a comment on the proposed draft framework for how registry operators are going to comply and respond to security threats. And this is something that was developed over the course of 2 years as a result of Spec 11 or Specification 11 in the new GTLD registry agreement, which itself was driven by the GAC's advice at the Beijing meeting in 2013. So this was a joint project between registrars, registries, and the GAC's public safety working group, and they've come up with a rather lightweight set of recommendations, best practices, best intentions. And let me thank and acknowledge the work of Denise Michelle, who drafted a brief BC comment that I think acknowledged the good work, but suggested we needed greater specificity, a higher call to action, and a very creative stroke, the idea of coming up with incentives to implement. And I think that Denise really hit on something we've said for years, which is, when a registry operator is having a tough time, they come to ICANN and ask for relief from fees or costs of some kind or burdens like insurance. We'd like to stand that on its head and say that as an incentive to implement the best practices for security, we'd encourage ICANN to do any fee reductions in exchange for good behavior as opposed to fiscal problems that occur. So, Denise, thank you again for getting that in. I know you're on the phone line. Anything you wanted to add, Denise?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Thank you again. There were only 5 comments filed on this. And given the nature of where we're headed with their recommendations, I don't think we'll be successful at getting them to raise the bar to say they shall or will do these things. But I am pretty confident we'll get greater specificity, which was a key part of the comment. And I'm going to suggest that we push hard on the idea of creating incentives. Thanks again, Denise. The current calendar open public comments is very light. There's only one outstanding public comment right now. This is the first attachment to yesterday's policy calendar. So let me ask those of you who are online to pull that up. It's a draft that I prepared. It's only 2 pages long. And it's a draft BC response to propose changes to ICANN's bylaws and GNSO's operating procedures that are required for the GNSO to respond to its rights and responsibilities under the Empowered Community. That's something we designed through the 3-year transition of the IANA and ICANN accountability transition. The draft comment itself will be filed on August the 10th. I sent over the weekend a draft outline, but yesterday with the policy calendar, I put some meat on those bones with a finished draft comment. This would be an ideal time for members to weigh in with their views on that comment. Marilyn, thank you for responding over list, and I think you emphasized the need for us to put a stake in the ground on GNSO versus the GNSO Policy Council. So, Marilyn, I think you'll find that that's what I did in the draft. So I'm happy to take a cue now of anyone who wants to make suggestions or ask questions about the draft, since we won't have another call before I file it. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hi, Steve. This is Stephanie Duchesneau with Google. So mindful that I haven't been involved in the conversations happening within the BC on this over the past few months, I'm aware of some of the dialogue. I understand the sort of arguments versus about the council is supposed to represent, what the meaning of a sort of policy council versus performance of other functions, and the argument that the BC wants this to be shifted to just having it be the voice of the different stakeholder groups and constituencies. But in my view, there still has to be some mechanism to balance out the different views of the SGs and Cs. And what is the alternative if we're saying that the GNSO is not the right mechanism? How are we envisioning that that would happen otherwise? I'm aware that in the current comment, we're just sort of taking out that that we previously put it on the record, and it doesn't seem like that's moving forward. But I'm curious about whether we discussed what the alternative to sort of finding balance by way of the structures that were built into the council.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Steve, it's Muriel.
I'll let you go next. And Stephanie, in the I chaired the drafting team. So when we prepared and presented this, once we lost the battle over whether it would be council or GNSO, we then moved to the question on how does it vote. And at that point, the CSG laid on the table a voting scheme whereby we restored the double weighting of the contract parties so that there would be balance between contract and non-contract. So I think that addresses the first question you had. And we also explored omitting the nominating committee vote with respect to these empowered communities, since the nominating committee members were given votes simply to break ties and were not accountable to any GNSO constituencies whatsoever. You can bet that that did not go over well with the NOMCOM members of the drafting team, so that didn't last long. But our key point, Stephanie, was to eliminate the idea of requiring a majority of each house. By requiring a majority of each house, then actions of the empowered community could be blocked by a single vote, in many cases the nominating committee rep, who would deny a majority for a half of the house that was split. If the registries and registrars disagreed, it wouldn't get a majority unless the nominating committee person voted. Same thing on our side of the house. In the non-contract party house, the commercial and non-commercial are often at odds, and we end up with a nominating committee person that breaks the tie. So the CSG was arguing that we not have a split house vote at all and simply look at supermajorities and majorities of the weighted balanced voting instead of a split house with a majority of each. And we made those arguments pretty explicitly, Stephanie. We actually included a table showing scenarios where the supermajority of the GNSO council would be in favor of something, and yet the majority of each house would block it. So one party would end up being able to block consensus. We laid it all out and did not carry the day. So I described that in the middle of page two, and perhaps I'll add some meat to those bones and describe the weighted nature of it. But it's sort of water under the bridge at this point, since we did not have the votes on the drafting team to make this happen. We didn't have the votes at council to get council to turn away. So we are now left with a set of thresholds and voting methods that we had a large hand in designing. We're not happy about the fact of where they sit, but they are, I think, completely appropriate for the exercise of the various powers in the empowered community. So, Stephanie, I'll add a little clarity on page two with respect to the weighted voting, but the answer to your question is absolutely yes. We laid out in some detail an alternative voting scheme. Anything else further on that, Stephanie?
No, that's super helpful. Thank you for taking the time, and I appreciate everyone's patience as I get up to speed on this.
Oh, not at all. It's well worth repeating, since I doubt many people remember what we did last fall. Marilyn, you're up.
Thanks. Well, first of all, Marilyn Cade, I'm going to just recall how important it is, because I see so many new members and want to say informally welcome to you. I just want to recall what we did when we said I cannot, and because I think sometimes people forget that there is a balance here that could go the wrong way. And if ICANN becomes a contracted party house or has too much duplication in the presence and the people in the contracted party house that duplicates the non-contracted party house, we put ICANN's antitrust shelter at risk, and we put the contracted parties at risk. We studied that extensively before we said ICANN up. One of the things about the policy council, and all you have to do is read the ICANN bylaws and understand that there is a limitation of the role of the GNSO policy council. The GNSO itself is much, much broader. And I think, Steve, I want to applaud the work you've done. I think we need to keep pushing this idea about we have, after all, elected officers in each of the constituencies in the SGs. We have elected officers in the ASO and in the CCNSO. I really prefer that we continue to push this issue, even if we are a minority voice, because we're trying to look out for the long-term health of ICANN and prevent it from being subject to competition authorities in Europe or in the U.S. or Department of Justice or other places if it looks like ICANN is becoming a trade association for contracted parties.
Thank you, Marilyn. Appreciate that clarification. In the first page of the draft comment, I lay out the part of the bylaws in Article 11 that describe the GNSO and the GNSO Council. And sure enough, it says that the GNSO Council is responsible for managing the policy development process. But ICANN legal staff agreed with the counselors on the drafting team that that was a indication but not a limitation. So they did not see that as a limitation. And they cited as evidence the fact that council had routinely for years been taking votes on things that were not strictly policy development, things like review teams, nominations, budgets, and the like. So I don't think we're going to win on any suggestion that the council is limited, because it really isn't limited. It's simply empowered, and the limitations implied. And I know that we're not going to reverse this right now, but we did put the board on notice in our public comments that we're going to be very vigilant of how GNSO Council exercises GNSO's powers in the empowered community. And the first instance where this split house vote, the majority of each house, the first time that that frustrates the majority or supermajority of the GNSO, I think that's the time we have to ring the bell the loudest and say, we told you so, that this structure might be appropriate for developing consensus policies, but it's completely inappropriate for the GNSO to be a part of the empowered community. Any other comments? All right, thanks, everyone. I'll consider this. We have several days left before I have to submit this on August the 10th. So please do a reply all on the list if you have any changes you'd like to make. Moving down the policy calendar, there aren't any other open public comments right now. And Chantel, we don't have a scroll line on there. We might need a scroll with the size of the page, please. The next item I'd like to bring your attention is that in Johannesburg, ICANN launched a new task force, and its job was to document actual uses of WHOIS. And the intent, the CEO, Joran, believes that if we document the legitimate uses of WHOIS and we take them to the European data protection regulators, the authorities, DPAs, that they might grant a blanket exception for the operation of WHOIS. And good on you. I hope you can pull that off. And Joran claims to know so many of those regulators that he believes he'll be persuasive. But at the same time, we're going to document all of these legitimate uses of WHOIS for another reason, and that is to be able to see whether we could comply with the GDPR, since the GDPR permits legitimate uses, legitimate transfers of personally identifiable information. And we would claim that many of the uses of WHOIS are legitimate uses to protect consumers, and to investigate and understand the technical or administrative operator of a website if, in fact, it's generating malware or denial of service attack. So ICANN posted a matrix of all the responses, and they've opened a public review period. It's not a formal public comment period, and they claim it'll be open until late August. In the policy calendar, I've included for you hyperlinks to that matrix. In that matrix, you'll see comments from the BC that were assembled by Susan Kawaguchi, and Susan, thank you for doing that, Also, Ben Wallace over at Microsoft submitted their own comments, which have made their way into the matrix as well. And Ben, thanks for sharing those with the BC as well. What I'd like to do is to let Susan, and to the extent that anyone else wants to weigh in, on what, if anything, should the BC do in response to the matrix. It's not a public comment period to say whether we agree with the matrix. What ICANN is claiming is, are there any other uses of WHOIS that should be added to the matrix, since the intent right now is to be inclusive, not necessarily persuasive? I'll take a cue on that. Susan, if you're with us, anything that you can add with respect to that, the work of that task force? Have you been on their calls, and can you tell us how that's gone?
Yes, we haven't had a call lately, so they were waiting to get us all the comments submitted or all the use cases submitted and then comments. I have not reviewed that matrix yet, but will. I submitted all the use cases that the EWG had come up with way back when, like 2015. And then except the IP-related ones, because Alex Deakin and I sort of shared the that workload. And so he submitted those on behalf of the IPC. So I'll take another look to see if there's anything. And if anybody comes up with a different use case that we missed, that would be helpful to note also. And then once we, the task force has all of the information they're looking for, then there's a discussion about how they're actually going to use this information. I don't think the exercise is a bad one. I'm really concerned about how they actually use this information and go to the data commissioners. In the RDS working group, we have been asking CCTLDs to tell us how they are complying with the GDPR, and Nominet recently submitted their comments to us, and they basically said that it was a legitimate interest to publish WHOIS data. Of course, they don't publish an email address.
Right, but the GDPR would prevent them from even publishing.
No, what was that? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, would the GDPR also prevent the publication of a name without an email address?
In their view, no, it does not. They stated that they thought they complied with the GDPR. So, you know, we'll have to see how that holds. But and then we're expecting additional EU CCTLDs to respond also. So we'll see what type of consensus we get.
Susan, this is Steve. Is there any effort on staff to consolidate the use cases?
I'm sure there will be. I haven't told of that yet, but it makes sense that they would take some use cases and sort of group them at least. I'll check in with Becky Burr on that.
Yes, Susan, and please do share with us any insights you learned. The BC's primary interest probably now is to understand whether we need to add records. But if we all identify records that are placed in there deliberately to make it seem as if WHOIS can be used to harm people, then it's possible that we offer a public comment about that use case, suggesting that it's not a legitimate use of WHOIS. It's actually prevented by the WHOIS terms of use. I've shared that all with you a little over a month ago, but the WHOIS terms of use prohibits mass commercial email, like spamming new registrants to try to get them to use your services for hosting. I look at the queue. I have Marilyn. Is that an old hand or new? Moving on. Denise Michelle, please. Go ahead.
Thanks, Steve. Can you guys hear me?
We do.
Great. So I think this sort of cross-community group pulling together uses is a useful foundation for the ICANN community moving forward. with grappling with the GDPR implementation and who is. I'm concerned, though, that this effort that staff is facilitating doesn't appear to account for any of the sort of relevant processes or fact patterns around data collection that will be so important to this conversation with regulators, things like consent of the data subject, et cetera. So I'm concerned that it will, if regulators are simply presented with use cases, it will present a limited data in a vacuum. And it could further encourage regulation to identity violations and disrupt the public whois system that we all rely so heavily on. So this brings me back to your question, Steve, about whether there are actions or next steps for the BC and other constituencies. And I think from the important perspective of the business constituency, I think one of our important contributions to this effort at this point would be, in addition to any comments or guidance people have on use cases, to provide comments that take this up to 10,000 feet and provide a broader context for important elements that need to be there in carefully planned and executed conversation with European regulators. And I would also repeat my concern that if the idea here is for Gorin to go to take this use case list and sit down with regulators, I think that is a very bad strategy for advancing the ICANN community's interest in this area. So I think the BC could also offer guidance in terms of sort of strategies and tactics. Many of our companies in the BC have had experience in dealing with European regulators. Many of us in the BC have a much greater understanding of the whois system than Gorin. I think we have a lot of experience and knowledge to bring to bear here. So I would suggest that we do file comments or send a letter to Gorin on this and outline some of the issues that we think need to be addressed and what we think a path to success is on this issue. Thanks.
Thank you, Denise. Do we have any other volunteers who would join Denise at drafting sort of a general comment or letter that we could put in on this matrix? Susan, do you believe that comments of the general nature would be taken on board by the task force as it prepares its report for management in its discussions with the European data authorities?
Yeah, I think that would be valuable, and Denise and I have sort of talked this over. I'd be happy to work with Denise on this too, and at the very least, it's we could use that comment to advocate on the GDPR task force in the next meeting. Be interesting too to get the IPC's consensus on this and see, you know, what their view is. I was talking to a couple members of the IPC and they had a little bit different take on it, in my opinion. So
and I understand the IPC is going to engage a law firm to opine on the GDPR in the next several weeks too.
And the RDS working group has already done that.
Okay. All right, so I have Susan, Denise, and Tim Chen so far who are interested in coming up with a general comment that provides a broader context. It's thought that this would be instructive to ICANN management if they do decide to go and negotiate with European data authorities. Denise, I share your view that it could be a bad idea for Joran to go at this alone, but he is determined to do so. And at this point, we want to make him as well equipped as he can be. But at the same time, we have a a plan B, which is to document all the legitimate uses in an effort to show that we actually are in compliance with GDPR. We don't need an exception. That's sort of the two aspects of this that are being arranged right now. Hey, Stephanie, thank you for also adding your name. So this is great. We have four volunteers, and we will need to move relatively quickly on this. I'll help by starting you off with a collection of prior general comments we've made about who is in the last year or two. We've done a lot on this. Let's see whether you think that would be helpful. All right, thank you very much. I have a couple of other brief announcements. The fact is that the ICANN Accountability and Transparency, or ATRT, has begun ATRT 3. They haven't actually named all of the review team participants. They have 26 applicants. One of them is Adetola Sogizan of the BC, Tola, and we don't yet know whether the selection committee chaired by Susan has decided about the GNSO's endorsees, but we have a situation now where the chairs of the ACs and SOs have to get together and pick their 21 review team members. And so they may pick alternates from the GNSO to include Adetola. It's sort of out of Susan's hands on the selection committee at this point because it's at the chair level.
Actually,
then I'll add another.
Steve,
go ahead, Susan. Go ahead.
Actually, for the GNSO Council, the selection standing committee just received from the GNSO I think it's 11. I'll have to go back and look. I just got it yesterday. And so we will select seven of those and indicate our top three, just as we've done for the RDS, who is two. And then it'll be James' job to go and try to push more of our candidates onto the review team. So it is in the hands of the selection committee, and probably won't. They're not asking us for a decision on this until late September, which I'm a little surprised at.
Great, thank you, Susan. So the opportunity there is to try to suggest that the CSG is really underrepresented in the 26 applicants, and I think that do your best to make an argument that TOLA ought to be on that ATRT 3. Thank you, Susan.
We'll do.
Got it. And another review team is the Security, Stability, and Resiliency. It's the second time around for this, so we call it SSR2. Our own Denise Michelle is co-chair of that review team, which has already convened and begun working. One of the reps on that review team had to resign. It was Emily Taylor. So that opening creates an opportunity for another BC member, Scott McCormick, who had been endorsed as one of the alternates by GNSO Council and the Standing Selection Committee. We'll have an opportunity to make an appointment, I hope, from among those that are left. And if not, it goes to the chairs of the ACs and SOs. And Susan, do you have any clarification on what role your selection committee would play in picking which of the GNSO alternates gets Emily Taylor's slot?
So James asked us to look at the four candidates that, you know, four through seven. Those were not ranked when we submitted those to the GNSO Council, and three of which have responded to ICANN saying they're still interested, Scott being one of them, and thank you for that. And so we will hopefully make a decision next week. We're scheduling a meeting, and hopefully to get that back to James or to the chair so that we can get that slot filled quickly. But then again, you know, at minimum it's three, maybe it will be four candidates. But those were all of the candidates that we, you know, looked at previously, so we're not opening it back up.
So for me to understand correctly, you might make the argument that GNSO could pick the person to take Emily's slot, and if you don't succeed in that, GNSO ends up throwing those four names into the mix, and the chairs of the ACs and SOs would pick the person. There's a chance, though, that we ought to insist that it be a GNSO person, though. Agreed?
No, this is our slot because that was one of the top three, the one, two, or three. Emily was in that group. So this is a GNSO slot, and GNSO will replace this person. So there's no SOAC involvement. It is just James informing them of the candidate.
Sorry, fantastic. Thank you. Marilyn Kate asks a question about geographic diversity, and that wouldn't be a factor in this replacement. It might well be a factor in getting Adatola selected for GNSO endorsement. Susan's well aware that the geographic, linguistic diversity elements, and I hope that the selection committee will take that on board as well. The chairs of the ACs and SOs are charged in the ICANN bylaws to consider diversity as among the factors they use when they vote on the composition of the final 21 people. Marilyn, did you want to add anything to that? We're a little tight on time.
I'll 30 seconds. I think it's really important for us to look at a number of the nominees, frankly, are a little long in the tooth. They've been around too long. Jean-Jacques, Wolfgang, Denny, Brian, Vonda, I think Sebastian, I think we might also want to think about whether we can promote some new blood kind of idea, and happy to talk offline about that. I know Shradeep from Sri Lanka through my work on the NRIs. I also, of course, know Yop and a few other of the people, but maybe we could think about not just geodiversity, but also wanting to have some new blood, new thinkers.
Marilyn, let me encourage you to send an email to Susan with whatever rhetoric that you think would be useful. Susan chairs the GNSO's Standing Selection Committee. That doesn't influence the rest of the AC and SO chairs, but it does influence the GNSO's selection to these review teams. Denise, you have your hand up.
I'm sorry, Phil.
Great. All right, thank you. Let me turn to Channel 2, which is the GNSO Council. The Council itself hasn't had the last meeting was the 13th of July. We've already covered on our previous BC call the motions that were approved there, and there hasn't been a Council meeting since. The next Council meeting is at noon UTC on the 24th of August. That agenda has not yet been published, nor have motions. This morning, Phil Corwin circulated a potential change to split part of a working group that's looking at the new GTLD subsequent procedures to split it up into multiple tracks. With that, I would ask whether Susan and Phil have anything you'd like to add to the upcoming Council meeting.
I'm not sure that Phil has audio or microphone. I did not see that email. I haven't checked emails yet this morning. But no, other than what you've reported in the policy calendar, I think, you know, that about covered it.
Any questions for our counselors, Susan and Phil? Okay, let's move on to the commercial stakeholders group report. Barbara, you're our liaison to the CSG, and in the policy calendar, I did include a discussion of the intersessional topics, sorry, not the intersessional, but the ICANN 60 topics, and I understand you're going to lead us through that as well as the discussion of intersessional. Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay. All right. Why don't I start first with the intersessional? Basically, there has not been much discussion yet within the CSG concerning the substance and what topics and so forth will be the focus of the intersessional. Right now, the discussions have focused primarily on more logistical decisions. There has been an expression of interest in holding the intersessional immediately following a GNSO Council meeting in January to enable to better enable participation of GNSO counselors. There has also been expression of keen interest in holding this the intersessional in Los Angeles, which is where the GNSO Council strategy meeting will be held, not only to piggyback on that meeting, but also to take advantage of senior staff being available. BC has expressed our keen interest in having senior staff participate in person at any intersessional meeting. That element was not delivered to our satisfaction in Iceland. So that's kind of where things stand at this point. The BC has agreed that we cannot provide ICANN with a list of delegates at this time because we don't know, this would, you know, we don't know who our next, who our BC officers would be. We have to wait until the election outcome later this year. But last year, I believe we sent 7 people to participate in the intersessional. You know, all of the members of the XCON in particular, plus I believe Lawrence also participated. So that's kind of where things stand now with the intersessional. We're really focused on scheduling, location to enable the participation of senior ICANN staff and to better enable participation by all of the ICANN community. In terms of planning for
Barbara, would you take a question?
Sure.
Would you
Thank
you very much. Thank you, Barbara. With respect to the intersessional, having attended all of the intersessionals, I thought the most recent one was the best one, the one in Iceland. We had the most engaging discussion. We don't always agree with our non-contract party house, but it was a good discussion. But it did suffer from being so far from ICANN management and staff. The dial-in presence of Joran was really unsatisfactory, and I would echo what Marilyn said earlier, is that we ought to try whenever possible to hold these meetings in conjunction with where ICANN management and staff is. And that's not always Los Angeles. We could end up trying to piggyback on the GDD meetings that are held around the world each year. We do have to balance this with one issue, though. If immigration and visa considerations get in the way, there will be objections to holding it in Los Angeles if there are members of the non-commercial stakeholders group who cannot attend. ICANN has never failed to get a waiver from OFAC for providing travel support, so it's not the money part, but it might be the immigration part. And we'll need to keep an eye on that and at least be sensitive to the fact that members of, it's not just the non-commercial, there's members of the BC who may come from countries that might find it difficult to travel to the USA. That's all I was going to add on that. Any other comments from people on the call regarding the intersessional? Okay, hearing none, go ahead, Barbara. Move on to ICANN 60. It's in the policy calendar at the bottom of page 2.
Okay, Steve, I will take those issues concerning visa considerations back to CSG discussions about the intersessional. And as I said, there's no clarity yet as to where it will be scheduled, just the with a premium placed on the availability of ICANN staff. In terms of planning for ICANN 60, again, at this point, we're primarily discussing the planning call that was held, I guess, last week or whenever, primarily focused on walking through topics that have been suggested for cross-community sessions. The BC advocated strongly for having another cross-community session that focused on, that followed up the focus on the GDPR and its implications for ICANN at ICANN 59. We received support from our fellow CSG constituents on that. We were also asked to participate in a poll to rank what we would feel would be the top 3 or 4 cross-community sessions. And the ranking that the BC XCOM advocated was, of course, to rank our GDPR proposal first, followed by operating standards for specific reviews, followed by community applications in the new GTLD program, followed reporting of DNS abuse, and then finally the jurisdiction. I would say the two topics that received the most discussion and were the most controversial in this planning call concern the jurisdictional issue, as well as updating progress and approach for the work of the CCWG accountability. In both instances, there was a concern that it was duplicative. Greg Shatton, who is one of the co-rapporteurs of the jurisdictions subgroup, also was concerned that if they did not yet have a product for public comment yet, that might be awkward in terms of the timing. So it's unclear how those two topics will fare, but we've given it our best shot in terms of promoting the session on GDPR. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Hey, it's Steve again. We had a question
Hello,
from Steve, Stephanie about whether...
Barbara, this is Lawrence. I'd like to jump in. Sorry, I'm on the other bridge only.
Thank you, Lawrence. I have a quick question. Stephanie asks Barbara whether DPA authorities would be present if we did a cross-community session on the GDPR. We have in the past, and of course.
I would, it's, and again, it's my understanding that it's the BC's preference that, unlike IGF workshops, that these cross-community sessions not be driven by one, not be driven by the proposer, that it be more, that the planning and so forth be more multi-stakeholder, if you will. So I guess following that example, that we would invite, you know, some one of the data protection authorities to participate.
Thank you, Barbara. I would agree completely.
Yeah.
It was very helpful to have the authority who spoke to us while we were in Joburg. We now have a quick little cue, Marilyn Cade and then Lawrence. Marilyn, go ahead.
Sorry, my comment was about the intersessional, Steve, and I want to quickly go back to it. Sorry I didn't get in line early enough. I thank you so much, Barbara, for the readout. I just want to report that I think we need to be more insistent than we were last time on the location and the participants. I'm not going to – this is being transcribed. I know it's private, but frankly, we were kind of held up by a person who is not even any longer allowed to attend the ICANN meetings for Iceland as a choice. And that cost us in our access to senior staff, but also face-to-face with the chair, sorry, with the CEO and the board members. So I'm just going to ask that we be very, very insistent and not apologize for it. As to the issue, Steve, very quickly about visas, sometimes that's a problem, but sometimes the fact that there is no mission or no consulate in a country where the IPC members, BC members, IP members are, is actually as big a problem as getting a visa waiver. And I just think we should, we've been successful in the past in getting people to a Washington, D.C. intersessional and to an L.A. intersessional, and that gave us great access, including to board members. So I would ask we prioritize that in the CSG engagement with our colleagues.
Thank you, Marilyn. Lawrence.
Hi, this is Lawrence for the record. My intervention still has to do with the intersessional also. I do recall that there happens to be some action, some line actions for the CSG. For example, there was this case where we had to quickly work at filling modalities for the board seats. My thinking is it might be necessary to, based on the bylaws that we operate at the moment, it might be necessary to look at actions that we might need to carry out as CSG. And maybe start the process way ahead of time, so that we don't fall short of, we don't have this difficulty of timing and walking through a process. Just trying to get a process to get the action done quickly. I know that we succeeded at filling the board seats, CSC, but then there was also the talk of the process that should lead to this subsequently. Is there any action with regards to this?
Yes, I can address that. Within the CSG, Wolf Ulrich is sort of taking the lead in terms of reaching out to the NCSG about this and beginning a dialogue with them so we don't have this problem, so we don't face this problem in the future. So, you know, at this point, we're at the very, very beginning stages, but we're just trying to get the wheels in motion and a conversation started.
Great.
Thank you, Barbara. Much appreciated. Thank you, Lawrence. Jimson, we're concluded with the policy and council and CSG, so we're over to you for admin, finance, and elections.
Okay, this is Jimson. Can you hear me?
We do.
Thank you. Well, let me begin first with respect to finance. I'd like to thank all members that have paid their dues, those that are yet to do so. And if it happens that you're having an issue, please do let me know so that can be speedily handled. Then with respect to operations, as you are aware, Phil Cohen of the Internet Commerce Association is the only candidate so far nominated for the GNSO chancellorship position. Also, only Jay Sudowski of IT Coalition and Sherry Miller of Verizon have been nominated for the NOMCOM small business and large business respectively. So I'd like to encourage members to please self-nominate for this position while noting the time commitment for those positions as well. Once again, this is the cap of the timeline. We are still in nomination period, and the nomination period will close by next Monday, August the 7th, by close to midnight. And after that, we will welcome candidate statements, and that will be sent directly to the list from Tuesday 8th August, and that will close by Tuesday the 5th of August. And we will hold candidates' call on August 16th by 4 p.m. Universal Time. By that time, you need to send in your questions to Chantel, who is an election officer, so that this question can be taken during the call. And then the election is going to be announced on August the 25th, that's a Friday. Let me also use the opportunity to let us know that the officer's elections will come up in November. This is based on our policy, existing policy. So members are to expect notification in mid-October. So you should expect notification for officers' election mid-October. You do know that we print newsletter, we publish newsletter, this is special newsletter at every ICANN meeting. So we are preparing one for ICANN 60. In this regard, I would like to invite short articles from members for the next edition of the BC newsletter. So it will cover maybe your experiences in ICANN meetings, or with respect to policy areas that you are interested in or the work you have been doing in one group or the other. So deadline for this is 22nd of August, Tuesday, 22nd of August. We plan to actually translate all the articles to Arabic because we want our hosts to be at home, that we are language compliant as well. Lastly, I would like to welcome new members. On behalf of all of us, I'd like to welcome Mr. Fashion Network Incorporated, based in New York, and is represented by John Kolasin, and also Network Software Technologies from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Christian is here with us, the CEO. So, then also like to welcome Maggie, now on Facebook. You're all welcome. So, I gather Bill is going to be online. Bill, we announced Bill of Assemble that joined us recently at the last meeting. So, I don't know if there is anyone of you on the call that want to introduce yourself briefly, and then maybe I can take questions on other issues that I've already discussed. Thank you.
Thank you, Jimson. Members of BC, any of you have questions for Jimson regarding the elections? Again, the opening of nominations is upon us. We have an opportunity for folks to nominate for the two nominating committee seats as well as our one counselor seat. That is the open right now. We'll have a candidate call on Wednesday, the 16th of August, but the nomination period closes on the 7th of August. All right, seeing no questions, we go to all other business. I want to quickly iterate that we have new larger committees in the BC for things like the Credentials Committee, that the group that evaluates applications from folks who want to become members of the BC. It's a very lightweight, easy to administer role, and it's an opportunity to contribute to the BC as well as to get to know the new members who come in and know a lot more about how the BC works. We have room for 5 volunteers on the Credentials Committee, and we're eager to have additional members of the BC at large get involved. It is only a few hours a month, and it only comes up when a new member has applied to the BC. The Finance Committee meets somewhat more frequently, and it's ably chaired by Jimson. The Finance Committee has a bit of busyness at the period of the year when we approve the budget, but other than that, it's a very easy role as well. So please, BC members who can, please do apply for that. I did want to turn to Marilyn, who put something on the agenda for all other business, but I see Jimson, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. This is Jimson. Just to underscore what you mentioned, yes, we'd like a member to really come up and get to have the experience. If you are not doing it, you will not readily know it. So when you are involved in one thing or the other, that you really know indeed how BC operates, how it runs. So I would like to recognize Lawrence. Lawrence has offered to serve in the Credentials Committee. So, but as Steve said, the room is still open. Whoever still wants to, then the executive can then make decision or we could have election. Then on the finance, yes, we appreciate new members. So to join us, we're 3 here right now, so we see our spaces. Yeah. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you, Jimson. Marilyn, you had an item of new business. Please go ahead.
Sorry, Steve, thank you so much. Let me do this quickly in case Billy or any of our Christian or others want to make introductory comments about themselves. Several years ago, and I do this very, very quickly, but several years ago, there was so much tension between the board and the staff of ICANN that we were referred to as the cross constituency, and that was not a positive comment about us. At that time, I created a breakfast with the board, and for several years, we organized as the BC. This predates the CSG. We always included the ISPs and the IPC, but we organized a breakfast with the senior staff and the board, and it was a really remarkable shift in our presence and the understanding of senior staff and the board about the business constituency. Margie, actually, as a member of the staff, has attended some of those breakfasts. Then we lost that opportunity because the board decided not to, under Crocker and Foddy, decided not to continue to meet with us. We've gone on to hold our breakfast with the GAC and with others. I would like to propose that for the AGM, ICANN 60, that the VC reinvigorate the idea of a board senior staff breakfast. I say that, or lunch, I say that versus the cocktail hour, which we're sometimes offered, because we don't actually get to do any policy positioning or a real identity building at a social event. So I want to put that on the agenda. I think it would be a really good use of our time. I'm happy to help to try to coordinate and work with others, but I'd like us to kind of try to go back to a face-to-face time over breakfast, so it does not replace our hour or whatever with the board talking about policy issues, but it could help us to, we're going to have 3 new board members as well as the existing board. If we could do the board, incoming board members, and the senior staff, I think that would be a really great opportunity for us.
Thank you, Marilyn. Barbara, as our CSG liaison, I'm hoping that you can take that on board and discuss it with the rest of the CSG XCOM as well. Thank you, Marilyn.
Sure. Yes, I certainly will raise that at our next CSG call. Just to play devil's advocate, I understand what you're saying, Marilyn, and I think it would be of value to us, but do you think the board and senior staff could come back and say, but why do we need a separate when we already have when we usually always have a meeting with you? Wouldn't that be duplicative? I'm just being devil's advocate. That's all.
Yep. Barbara, why don't I email you offline with some of the history that might be helpful?
Perfect idea.
Okay,
Marilyn.
Yeah.
Get some rhetoric.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Perfect idea. Thank you. If there's no other business, I will thank all of you for attending the BC call. Our next call is set up for this same time on Thursday, the 17th of August. Everyone, enjoy the next 2 weeks, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks all.